This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
More U.S.-China tensions weighed on the markets in Wednesday's trade. Welcome to Market Talk. Thank you so much for joining us and making us part of your day. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here with you once again as we are looking at Wednesday's market trade. And again, the U.S.-China tensions weighing on things, especially the soy market on the day. Corn able to be mostly firm on the session, with the wheat market mostly lower, minus spring wheat having a decent day. Cattle futures having a good day while the hog market was mixed. We saw stocks mostly stabilizing, with the Dow up 400 points here, a little over that at last check. S&P up 65, the NASDAQ up 338. Crude oil down about $3 a barrel here as we work through our afternoon trade. And again, China, U.S. tensions, that is at the forefront after U.S. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi visiting Taiwan here this week, leaving Taiwan today. China focusing its initial punishment on Taiwan. China suspended trade with Taiwan as a punishment for it hosting U.S. House Speaker Pelosi. And it halted imports of fish and some fruits from Taiwan while also suspending exports of natural sand to Taiwan. The quartz from the sand is used in the development of semiconductor chips, although Taiwan officials say that it accounts for less than 1% of its total demand. Now, China's also engaging in live-fire military exercises at various points surrounding Taiwan, including some on Taiwan's backside and some that reach into Taiwan's territorial waters. Freight that normally travels through the South China Sea has been warned to avoid the area, slowing movement of vital commodities and goods. The Taiwan Straits are part of a vital shipping lane for freight moving between Asia and the West. So again, the ongoing tensions here with the visit by Pelosi to Taiwan is something we're watching in the market trade overall as really having an effect on the bean chart. We're trying to fill some gaps here, it appears, in some of these contracts. So that is something as well. Some technical traders taking advantage of some of the downtrend to try and fill some of these gaps here as we work through our day today. And we really did see all the markets down. Corn able to rally some, though, as we work through the session. Again, with a fairly quiet mixed trade hanging around that $6 handle here in the corn market. Commodity traders really just, again, focusing on the risk of declining demand with any other stories not really taking precedent here today. We're still watching weather, of course, as we continue to see hot and dry weather in parts of the Western Belt, although the forecast has moderated a little bit. But really, again, the U.S.-China tensions over Taiwan are at the forefront. Let's take a look at what's going on with everything in the trade today. Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. We talked to him around midday today. And first, got Arlen's thoughts on just what's going on in the grains overall, looking at the crude oil market, soybeans as well, and more here as we look at Wednesday's trade action. Here are those comments with Arlen Suderman of StoneX.
Yeah, we got a pretty good bounce overnight from the grain and oilseed markets, but that didn't last very long. Once the day session opened, the sellers started coming back in. The momentum traders started adding to those sell orders, and it really seems that, and it coincided also with a loss in energy as well. So that broader commodity sector coming under pressure, as the funds seem to be more worried about recession hurting demand for commodities, and the tensions with Taiwan certainly don't help matters either. A little bit of anxiety that that tension might start hurting demand from the world's largest importer of commodities. And so more sell orders this morning with the algos kind of piling on as the momentum turns lower.
Arlen, you mentioned crude oil lower here today. I wonder if that has something to do with what is going on with the U.S.-China tensions and the Taiwan effect right now. Would you say that's the case?
Well, certainly that's a factor. China is a major importer of energy, but as we look at that whole Taiwan story, I think there's also greater concerns in the energy sector about China's economy. We got some economic data out of China this week showing that China's economy is really struggling as they continue with their zero tolerance toward COVID policy that is shutting down large areas of their economy, and even areas that aren't shut down, it has people changing their buying behavior because they're worried that if they go out and shop or eat in restaurants, et cetera, that they might come across somebody who tests positive the next day, and then they'll get a notice on the phone that they have to report to a quarantine center. Worries. China is at the center of it, yes, but for a combination of reasons.
What about soybeans, Arlen? Could they be affected here, too, with the U.S.-China tensions? Of course, China, a big importer of soybeans. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, soybeans are the commodity that they're most dependent upon the U.S. for because Brazil simply can't produce enough to meet their needs. And so when prices have been high this summer and Brazil was starting to be tight at times because farmers weren't selling, China just started releasing soybeans from their reserves. And as such, we've seen some significant reductions in soybean imports through the summer and demand. And that's allowed Brazil to stretch its supplies into our new harvest season when China thinks it'll get cheaper beans. China's also made arrangements here recently to be able to import soy meal from China. And the only real reason that I can see for that would be to expand their available supply of protein in the event that they do get in a broader conflict with the United States over Taiwan and they can shut off or at least significantly reduce soybean purchases from the United States. If they pull soybeans from Brazil as well as soy meal from Brazil, they can stretch their protein supplies. Of course, that would currently send a lot of Brazil's normal customers back to the United States, just kind of rearranging who trades with who.
Arlen, keeping an eye as well on the weather forecast, seeing that moderate a little bit, but what are your thoughts there, how that'll play into the market trade?
Yeah, I think if fund managers are having trouble really grasping how this kind of ebb and flow of the weather pattern is going to impact the corn and soybean crops. We're basically moving into a pattern of the month of August, which is expected to be more mild and wet in the eastern Midwest. And we've got some areas in the eastern Midwest that have been quite dry, but overall it's not hurting as much as the West. And the West is going to continue to be under the influence of high pressure. That means above normal temperatures overall are expected, although probably the most intense heat is now going to be behind us, but more drier conditions. The key is going to be that transition zone that includes Iowa, our number one corn producing state. As low pressures move across southern Canada, trailing cold fronts across the Midwest, how much will those fronts be able to interact with moisture coming up from the Gulf to provide rain for Iowa? If Iowa falls short, then the nation as a whole is going to fall short. If Iowa gets those rains, then we probably have enough good corn in the east to offset some of the bad corn in the west in the eyes of the market.
And again, that's Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, joining us here today around midday to take a look at our market trade for Wednesday's session, getting Arlen's thoughts on everything going on, especially with those U.S.-China tensions, again, really at the forefront in the market trade here as we work through this first week of August. Well, coming up, we're going to have a conversation with Richard Fordyce, Business Growth Director of Agriculture at Osborne Barr Paramore, talk about everything going on in the markets, the world of agriculture, and more. That's coming up next as we're back with more market talk right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now here on Market Talk, he is the Business Growth Director of Agriculture with Osborne Barr Paramore OBP. Richard Fordyce is with us. Richard, great to catch up with you again, sir. How are you?
I am great, Jesse. It is good to catch up with you again. And I don't know, there's always something to talk about, right, in this industry. So
there is always something to talk about. And I have a few things in mind to talk about with you here today, Richard. I think first, I know you were recently on a panel at NCGA's Corn Congress in D.C. discussing the Farm Bill. I believe you were on that with Dan Glickman and Heidi Heitkamp. And, you know, obviously farm bill discussions, they are ongoing. There's a lot of talk. We're seeing all the various commodity organizations and livestock groups, et cetera, coming out with their priorities for the farm bill. Talk about that panel. What did you hear from everyone at Corn Congress? And what was your takeaway from that panel?
The farm bill is such a big piece of legislation. If it's when I was the administrator, I actually had the book because I had to I had to reference it every day. But it's almost 900 pages long if it's printed in book form. And so, you know, when you think about Title I, which is the commodity title, all the way down to Title 12, which is the miscellaneous title, things that don't fit other places go in there. There are a lot of issues. You know, the nutrition title is, you know, depending on the year, can be 80 to almost 90% of the funding for the farm bill goes through the nutrition title, which obviously provides a lot of great and truly life-saving, you know, food for folks. It's also a part of the school nutrition program. So, I mean, obviously very important there as well. But, you know, from the corn growers' perspective, certainly, you know, crop insurance is a key element for them, you know, to continue. Certainly don't carve away anything out of crop insurance and maybe make it more robust. Some of the things that have been discussed is making, you know, making some of the crop insurance products a bit more nimble, right? So that a farmer can respond to a market trend, for example. Is there a chance to, as an example, right? Right now, you know, we're seeing some really, I think, attractive prices in wheat. In my part of the world, we haven't grown wheat here for 15 years. And so does it make sense? And can you insure a wheat crop followed by a double crop soybean crop? And I think just talking to people, just, you know, rank and file farmers around the country, I think there's a lot of people that are at least looking at planting wheat who haven't planted wheat for a long time, you know, not only to take advantage of that market. And that sounds kind of cold and calloused, but there is a shortage of wheat. And, you know, with what's going on in the Ukraine, you know, is there an opportunity for American farmers to pick up that slack and be able to provide some of that, you know, much needed grain in certain parts of the world that really are needing it because they've lost that Ukrainian market. So I think definitely flexibility in crop insurance. Certainly, I mean, if any of us have been paying attention, you know, not only through the Biden administration's priorities, but I think we're hearing it now more from commodity groups and other farm organizations and some members of Congress looking at climate smart agriculture and how, you know, how can programs, you know, maybe in the conservation title or other, maybe the commodity title, how can those, how can they, you know, move nuance a bit to help support, encourage farmers to implement even more climate smart agricultural practices. We know the science is there in a lot of areas, you know, to be able to adopt those kinds of things. But what will the farm bill do to even help move that farther, a little bit farther forward? So I think that's certainly interesting. I've even heard mention of something on the crop side from a safety net program that would kind of resemble the dairy margin coverage program, okay, where farmers are actually buying a premium through USDA, and it likely would happen through Farm Service Agency, where you insure against a margin. So we're seeing historically high prices, but we're seeing historically high inputs as well. And so, you know, is there an appetite, you know, to include something like that? So maybe you modify the ARC and the PLC programs or something to, you know, to include some sort of a margin protection program of some kind. I've not seen or heard anything that anyone's put on paper yet. Mm-hmm. But those are some things that certainly I've heard. And then finally, Jesse, I know probably talking a little too much about that, but the message that I heard, you know, at National Corn Growers Corn Congress was that whether it's corn growers, soybean growers, cotton, whatever the case is that collaboration and partnership is going to be really important. You know, the more people, the more organizations and the more perspectives that we can get that are aligned on whatever the issue is, the easier it's going to be to get some movement on that. So, you know, just partnering and collaboration where we can do that, where it makes sense and where folks agree to move some of these major issues forward, hopefully sooner and less painfully.
Well, Richard, a lot of stuff definitely we're keeping our eyes on with the Farm Bill moving forward. And I'm sure as well, while you were at Corn Congress and as you talk to farmers around the country, you might be hearing about the drought and some of this persistent heat that we've seen, especially across the Western Corn Belt, Western Plains. We've seen the crop ratings start to take a hit on the corn side and some of beans as well. But I know that there's a lot of worry when it comes to how this heat is shaping up, especially with more heat on the books here, it looks like for the month of August. So what are you hearing from growers who, in some of those areas that have really been affected by the heat and dryness?
Yeah. You know, again, another really relevant topic of conversation. And it's really, you know, I look at the drought. I mean, full disclosure, we have a pretty good looking crop here. We've caught some rains. But you know, just for my time, you know, serving as administrator, it's one of those things. It's kind of like brushing your teeth. I look at the crop progress and condition report, and when it comes out each week, and then certainly the drought monitor. And you know, some areas did receive some meaningful rainfall that had been extremely dry, but there are still areas where those shades of red are getting darker. And you know, talking to growers in probably two or three different states that are impacted. You know, so for example, let's just do soybeans and corn. Soybeans are a pretty resilient plant. You know, they can a lot of times hang on. You're going to see a decline in final yield, but if you get a rain at some point before they've died, you're going to have a crop, right? It may not be what you had anticipated or what you'd expected when you put that seed in the ground, but corn is so determinant when different stages of that plant is maturing that if you're in a stressful situation, for example, at pollination, you know, it's hot, it's dry, you know, that's going to just knock the daylights out of that yield. So I was actually, you know, you and I were visiting here before we started the show, and I had traveled from my home here in Northwest Missouri. I traveled down to Central Missouri, and kind of that I-70 corridor, like a county north, a county south, has been hot and it has been dry. And we saw corn last Saturday on the way down. We saw corn that looked like the tops of pineapples and was just about, it was just about that color before it starts to turn gray. So it, you know, my wife was traveling with me. I said, that corn is done. Like it's not, there'll be no yield there. Well, they got rain on Sunday or Monday. It had cooled off, dropped about 25 degrees. We were traveling home yesterday and that corn looked pretty resilient. Like it looked a lot better. What that'll ultimately do to yield, I don't know, but I've talked to growers and farmers in Kansas, some in Nebraska, you know, and some of the same stories where you see those colors on the drought monitor. And just one final thing on that, Jesse, it is so darned disheartening when you have put all this research and all this effort and all this time in planting that crop, and just because of your geographic location, you're not getting rain. You go up the highway 10 miles and they are getting rain. Their crop's green and lush and yours is burning up. I've been there before, and I'm telling you, that is a very disheartening, disappointing, helpless feeling. And so I know, and you know, some of the guys that I visited with, I've certainly said, hey, I feel for you. Like this is not, it's not good. It's certainly not what you want, but it is, you know, if the whole darn country's dry, everybody's dry. But when it's not, there are people that, you know, nothing they didn't do a better job managing, are going to have a crop, and somebody's not. It's not a good thing.
And again, that's Richard Fordyce, Business Growth Director with OBP. We're going to continue our conversation next, back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And we continue here on Market Talk today. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us. Thanks for making us part of your day here again today, as we are having a conversation with Richard Fordyce, Business Growth Director of Agriculture at Osborne Barr Paramore. He, of course, used to be at USDA. He was an administrator at USDA and always full of knowledge. And we appreciate him taking the opportunity to chat with us here again this month on Market Talk as we continue our conversation. And we've really just been focusing on a lot of different topics that are weighing in on the world of agriculture here as we move forward. Let's get back to our conversation with Richard Fordyce here on today's episode of Market Talk. Richard, let's turn our attention. You mentioned Ukraine earlier, the Black Sea. Since the last time you and I talked, we had this deal signed, whether it was one deal, concurrent deals, you know, there. So a little bit of smoke and mirrors, it felt like, to everything. But with Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the United Nations to get grain exports out of Ukraine, you know, and then a day after signing it, we have Russian missiles hitting Odessa, hitting the port of Odessa. Sounding like that some of these ships are going to make it out, but there's still just, it feels like a lot of uncertainty to this entire situation and just how much grain will get out of the ports that's been sitting there for quite some time now.
Yeah, you know, your guess is as good as mine. I honestly, when I heard the agreement, I thought, well, you know, that's good, right? Because, you know, there are export destinations for that grain. You know, Africa, the Middle East, other places where they've been waiting on this, right? Like there are animals that are going hungry. There are people that are going hungry, relying on these grain shipments out of, you know, the port of Odessa is one of, I think, three or four ports, but super high volume port. They had an agreement. I was actually reading something about it where they needed an escort vessel. So the vessels that came in needed to be inspected to make sure they weren't bringing in, you know, weapons or something to support the war effort for the Ukrainians. They had they would have a lead vessel that would lead the ships into the port and then take them back out once they were loaded. And so I think they were ready to go. And then, you know, two missiles hit the infrastructure at the port of Odessa. Now they didn't, at least from what I understand, they did not hit the silos. So that grain's still at the port and there has been some movement. I think that missile attack was Saturday maybe. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's movement again, but it's incredibly frustrating. Well, it's more than that. And I could use other words, but we can't on this show. When Russia had agreed to allow those exports to leave, and it just seems sinister and evil that you sign an agreement, and I think they signed it on Friday, and then two missiles hit the infrastructure of that port on Saturday. That's pretty disingenuous at the very least, and you know, probably was potentially could have been planned, you know, before they even signed the agreement. So you know, my hope is that there will be opportunities to start bringing some of that grain out. But, and I think we talked about this on a previous episode. That's last year's production, right? So, you know, Ukrainian farmers, they weren't super motivated to go plant when there were tanks rolling across their field. And so just the production in that highly productive area, you know, that is the breadbasket of the world. We think it's here, but that's the original breadbasket of the world. And, you know, so production, and I've seen estimates, is going to be 30-40% off just because they aren't able to plant or didn't plant Or there was damage after they planted. So there's going to be, there's going to be long-term effects there. And I hope and honestly hope and pray that they can figure out some way to start moving some of that production, some of that grain out of there into those markets that truly, truly need it.
Definitely. Well, we have seen some risk premium put back into the markets as well here on the Chicago board with the weather and the Ukraine situation. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of things we need to watch there. I want to turn our attention to inflation and recession, Richard. Obviously, that continues to be a hot topic in the markets, in the news, in agriculture and rural America. We're feeling the pinch. A lot of folks are wondering what the end is going to be like here. Will there be a soft landing or not? Most don't think there's going to be a soft landing to the economy here. And we are technically officially in a recession now with two straight quarters of negative GDP growth. Interest rate hikes as expected from the Fed. But as you look at everything as a whole, and you talk to farmers and folks across rural America, I know that inflation and recession, this is stinging a lot of folks, and it's a big worry, especially in agriculture right now.
No, you're right. And, at least in this part of the world, we're seeing a little bit of relief in the energy prices. So gasoline, diesel fuel's coming down a little bit, but it's still whatever. I think road diesel here yesterday, I think, was $4.80. Mm-hmm. When it was, it had been over $5. So energy prices certainly directly affect just everything we do in agriculture, right? Whether that's fertilizer production all the way to, actual farming, right? Obviously we'll have issues this fall. When folks are wanting to dry corn and that sort of thing. So that's taken a bite out of potential profits. And then this interest rate hikes, if you've got a long-term, if you've got a long-term debt, that's a real estate debt, for example, that's probably a fixed rate, where that rate was bought, maybe in a secondary market or something that you're not going to see any movement there. But gosh, any kind of input, financing, operating line of credit, short-term loans, maybe, again, for equipment or capital purchases. If you add 2 or 3 points on some of these loans, the amounts of some of these loans, that's real money. And so, I think there's certainly some nervousness there. Where are these interest rates headed? I'm a product of the farm crisis. My first crop was 1983. My first operating loan was 19%. And I wanted to be a farmer. believe it or not. I do think that's the case. Who knows where inputs are going? We could see a reversal before some of this crop input, activity is happening. I don't know where it's headed. Right. So when the things that either the input suppliers either have to buy as far as ingredients or to transport, these types of inputs, or just frankly, just to manufacture them, it's cost. So whether, let's leave everything the same, they probably have some sort of a line of credit, but they also rely on energy a great deal as well. And so just everything being the same, those things will cost more next year because of those components that go into that, all of the things that they need to do to create those, manufacture those inputs. So I don't know what to think. I'm a little nervous about what. We thought we had input issues this year. All spring, talking to folks, we thought there was going to be a problem with inputs for the 2022 growing season. Most mm-hmm. growers had already either booked it, paid for it, maybe even had it in their warehouses. They were worried about 23. I think I am too.
And I think that I will echo that sentiment with you. I think I'm one of the folks who is worried about 23 as well. Richard, great stuff as always. Before we wrap it up, I'll kind of open the floor to you. Anything else you want to hit on or touch on that we have it here today?
You know, Jesse, you do such a great job of guiding us through our conversation. You know, I don't necessarily, other than, you know, I don't think there's any more noble pursuit than the pursuit of growing food, right? So, you know, America's farmers and the people that support America's farmers, by golly, we just talked about inputs and inflation, recession. Farmers are still going to be here. You know, they might not have as big a smile on their face, but they're still going to be here. And I am just as proud as I can be to be associated with this industry, you know, to be a farmer. And then also, you know, my work with Osborne Barr Paramore, where we tell the good story of agriculture. That's what we do every day for, you know, for our clients. And it's just, you can't find finer people than the people that are engaged in agriculture.
Well, with that, we'll wrap it up. Business Growth Director of Agriculture with Osborne Barr Paramore OBP, Richard Fordyce. Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great one.
All right. Thanks, Jesse. You too.
And again, that is Richard Fordyce, Business Growth Director of Agriculture with Osborne Barr Paramore OBP. We always appreciate him making time to join us here on the program for our discussions on Market Talk and just to get his insights on what's going on in the world of agriculture. Richard, of course, still very connected to farmers and ranchers across the country. So again, we appreciate him making time to join us here today on the program. Coming up next, here in a few weeks, we are going to be broadcasting live from Dakota Fest in Mitchell, South Dakota, and enjoying what is going on there. Coming up in Mitchell in the middle of August, we're going to talk with Nikki Jones from Dakota Fest. She's going to detail what's happening. Coming up next here on Market Talk, back with more right after this.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to talk about Dakota Fest coming up August 16th through the 18th in Mitchell, South Dakota. Nikki Jones is with us. And Nikki, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Of course. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well. Busy, busy, getting ready for the show.
Definitely. Well, busy indeed. There's a lot of things to prepare for as we are less than a month away from Dakota Fest. And, you know, looking at this year, I know you guys are working hard on a great lineup once again. Just I know as well, getting back into some more normalcy and getting back into the swing of things. Last year's Dakota Fest was great and looking forward to, I'm sure, an even bigger event this year, Nikki.
Yeah, we're excited for the event this year. You know, we've got, like you said, an agenda full of, you know, interesting stuff. I think that, you know, in addition to our 400 exhibitors bringing all their latest stuff, all their newest technologies and products and services, they're excited, I know, to talk to all the attendees. And there's just so much to look at and see. But in addition to that, we, of course, always have our education sessions. We have a lineup of sessions, one specifically about the carbon pipeline. It's called the Carbon Pipeline Forum, and we've got a few experts that are going to be answering questions and talking a little about that on Tuesday, the 16th. And then also on Wednesday, we'll have the South Dakota Congressional Delegation there talking about the upcoming Farm Bill and all of the things that need to be in the Farm Bill, shouldn't be in the Farm Bill, how they should be, you know, presented from a South Dakota perspective. So I think people will be really interested in hearing about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know those sessions, especially Farm Bill, you get the delegation there. A lot of farmers and ranchers across the state. They're always wanting to know what their legislators have to say, and they always want to ask them questions as well. And that's a great forum to try and get some answers and ask some questions, Nikki.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that'll be well attended. We, of course, do those in the Reeves Education Building on the northeast or northwest corner of the show. I do want to mention too, Thursday, we will have the Women in Ag event on Thursday morning, which will be exciting. We have a keynote speaker this year, Michelle Miller, the Farm Babe. She is a social media influencer and a big ag advocate. And she's going to be there speaking to us about how to tell the agriculture story. But then following that, of course, we're going to find out who wins the Dakota Fest Woman Farmer Rancher of the Year. We have five amazing finalists, and we've got them up on the website if anybody's curious about them.
Yeah, and I know I was just looking through that as well, and I was going to mention that five great finalists for the Woman Farmer Rancher of the Year, and I know folks can read a little bit more about them, as you mentioned, on the website. And I think as well, you know, you mentioned the exhibitors earlier. That's a big part of the show, obviously, with whether you name it seed companies, chemical, equipment, etc. And it always feels like every year there's a lot of great new technology that's unveiled, etc., and just a lot of great conversations had during Dakota Fest.
They do. And I think Dakota Fest is a good place to make those connections, whether you have your local dealer that you need to visit and talk with, or whether you're looking for someone new or something new. It's all going to be there, and it's beneficial. And, you know, you make those connections to help grow your business and grow your family farm. So, you know, that's why we exist. And we're certainly excited to help make those connections. And, you know, we do have a new thing this year, because it doesn't have to be all business. You know, we've got Fest in the name. So we like to mix it up a little bit. We've got the new networking lounge this year, which will be a tent at the northeast corner of the show, and we're gonna have some live music in there, and you can grab some snacks, some beverages, and sit and chat. Also a good place to make connections. So we're gonna have Weston Frank out there playing music live, and a couple other folks. So I think it's just in addition to the business and, you know, getting out there and talking to exhibitors, it's a really good time to sit and relax, especially in the heat. It's exactly. Nice to have a place to sit down.
Exactly. Fantastic stuff. Now let's talk tickets. If folks want to get tickets here in advance for Dakota Fest, whether it be one day, all 3 days, August 16th through the 18th, again, what's going to be the best way to get those tickets, Nikki?
Sure. Go to dakotafest.com. And you can order your tickets online. They're $7 online versus, you know, if you get them at the gate, you can do that too. They're going to be $10 at the gate. If you get them online, you can also use code RADIO22 online at checkout and get an additional $2 off, so you can get a $5 ticket. So I would encourage people to go to dakotafest.com.
DakotaFest.com. Again, use that code RADIO22 and get your tickets for $5. And of course, all the information up on the Dakota Fest website. Looking forward to it. Again, coming up August 16th through the 18th in Mitchell, South Dakota. Nikki, I appreciate the time. Thanks for catching us up a little bit on Dakota Fest. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon as we get ready for the show.
Very good. Thanks, Jesse.
And again, that is Nikki Jones with Dakota Fest, and we appreciate her time joining us here today on Market Talk, highlighting Dakota Fest coming up here in just a couple of weeks in Mitchell, South Dakota. We're looking forward to it as well. We'll be broadcasting live there during Dakota Fest on Tuesday and Wednesday. Also, want to highlight, we are going to be providing our own educational session, the American Ag Network with Market Talk and Agriculture of America, our other sister radio show as well. We're going to be putting on this session discussing the markets and continued volatility. The market trade, you know, it continues to remain volatile as we work through this year. Inflation, the war in Ukraine, weather. You throw in the U.S.-China issues now. More, just everything continues to affect the trade, it seems. We're going to have a discussion on the commodity market outlook the rest of the year and beyond with market analysts during Dakota Fest. This session is going to be on Wednesday of Dakota Fest, so we hope you can join us for that. It's going to be happening at 1 o'clock in the Reeves Center, and we're going to be joined by Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing and Mike Miner of Professional Ag Marketing on stage. I will be there moderating the session. Looking forward to this. We're going to talk to them coming up during Dakota Fest. More details, tickets, everything online, dakotafest.com. You can use the code RADIO22 to get a discount. That's going to do it for Market Talk here today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help.
You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.